Before we dive in, I need to mention that this episode is entirely AI-generated, including the voices you're hearing. Today's show is brought to you by Flowboard, the fictional productivity app that turns your scattered thoughts into organized action plans. Though Flowboard doesn't actually exist, so please don't try to download it. As always, some details in our discussion might not be perfectly accurate, so double-check anything important before making major decisions. Marcus, and today we're talking about a book that might just save your product team from years of wasted effort. We're discussing Escaping the Build Trap by Melissa Perry, and I'm thrilled to have Melissa herself here with us.
Thanks for having me, Marcus. I'm excited to dig into this.
So let's start with the big picture. What exactly is the build trap, and why did you feel compelled to write an entire book about escaping it?
The build trap is when organizations become stuck measuring their success by outputs rather than outcomes. They're focused on shipping features, hitting release dates, and keeping developers busy, but they're not actually solving real problems for customers or driving business results.
That sounds like a lot of companies I know. How did you first recognize this pattern?
I was consulting with organizations that would bring me in because their products weren't performing well. Time and time again, I'd see the same thing. Teams that were incredibly busy, shipping constantly, but when I'd ask what problems they were solving or what success looked like, I'd get blank stares.
And these weren't small startups. You worked with major companies dealing with this.
Exactly. I saw billion-dollar companies where product managers were essentially project managers with fancy titles. They were managing backlogs and writing requirements, but nobody was asking whether we should build these features in the first place.
What's your background that gave you this perspective? Because this seems like something a lot of people in product don't see.
I've been doing product management for over 15 years, but I also have an entrepreneurship background. When you're bootstrapping a startup, you can't afford to build the wrong thing. Every feature has to count. But somehow, in larger organizations, that discipline gets lost.
So the book is essentially about bringing that startup discipline to bigger organizations.
It's about creating a culture where you're building the right things, not just building things right. The trap is seductive because it feels productive. You're shipping, you're hitting deadlines, stakeholders are happy, but you're not actually creating value.
And presumably, this becomes a massive competitive disadvantage over time.
Absolutely. While you're busy building features nobody wants, your competitors are solving real customer problems. You wake up one day and realize you've spent years going in circles.
Let's talk about your central thesis. You argue that the solution is outcome-based product management. What does that actually mean in practice?
It means shifting from asking, what should we build, to asking, what problems should we solve? You start with customer and business outcomes, then work backwards to figure out what to build.
But I imagine a lot of people think they're already doing this. How do you tell the difference between real outcome-based thinking and just talking about outcomes?
Great question. Look at how decisions get made. In the build trap, decisions are driven by opinion, politics, or the latest customer request. In outcome-based organizations, you have clear success metrics tied to business objectives, and you're constantly testing whether your solutions are working.
You mentioned that this isn't just about individual product managers. This is an organizational problem.
Exactly. I've seen brilliant product managers fail because they're in organizations that reward shipping features over solving problems. The incentives, the processes, the culture, everything has to align around outcomes.
What's the intellectual history here? Where does this build trap mentality come from?
A lot of it comes from traditional project management thinking that got applied to product development. In construction, you want to build exactly what was specified on time and on budget. But products are different. You're dealing with uncertainty and learning.
And presumably, the rise of agile development made this worse in some ways.
Agile helped with delivery, but many organizations focused on the mechanics of sprints and stand-ups without embracing the learning mindset. They became really good at building the wrong things faster.
So your approach is different from the traditional product management wisdom. How exactly?
Traditional product management often starts with solutions. Someone has an idea for a feature, and the product manager's job is to write requirements and get it built. I'm saying start with the problem space, understand what success looks like, then experiment your way to solutions.
Let's get into the specifics. What are the key frameworks you present for escaping this trap?
The first is the product kata, which is a systematic approach to experimentation. It's a four-step process. Understand the direction, grasp the current state, establish your next target condition, and iterate toward that target condition.
Walk me through a real example of how this works.
Let's say you're working on an e-commerce app and your direction is to increase customer lifetime value. Your current state might be that customers make one purchase and never return. Your target condition might be getting 30% of first-time buyers to make a second purchase within 60 days.
And then the iteration part is where you experiment with different solutions.
Right? You might test email campaigns, loyalty programs, or product recommendations. But the key is you're measuring against that specific outcome. Second purchases within 60 days, not just whether people open emails or click buttons.
How long should each iteration cycle be?
It depends on your context, but I generally recommend 2 to 4 week cycles. Long enough to learn something meaningful, short enough to change course quickly if you're on the wrong track.
You also talk about something called the product strategy framework. How does that fit in?
Strategy connects your day-to-day experiments to the bigger picture. It's about making intentional choices about where to play and how to win. Without strategy, you're just running random experiments.
Can you break down the components of a good product strategy?
You need a clear vision of where you're going, specific strategic intents that define how you'll get there, and tactical decisions about what to build. Most organizations have vision statements, but no clear strategic intents.
What does a strategic intent look like in practice?
For Netflix, a strategic intent might be reduce the time it takes for users to find something they want to watch. That's specific enough to guide decision-making, but broad enough to allow for multiple solutions.
And presumably, you can measure whether you're succeeding at that intent.
Exactly. You can track metrics like time to play, completion rates, user satisfaction scores. The intent gives you a North Star for your experiments.
Now, you spend a lot of time on organizational design. What needs to change structurally for this to work?
The biggest thing is moving from project-based teams to persistent product teams. When you're constantly forming and reforming teams around projects, you lose the deep customer understanding that drives good product decisions.
What does a persistent product team look like?
It's a cross-functional team with a product manager, designer, and developers who own a specific area of the product long-term. They become experts in their users' problems and can make informed decisions about what to build.
How do you determine the right boundaries for these teams?
I recommend organizing around user value, not technical architecture. Each team should own a complete user journey or job to be done. If users have to interact with multiple teams to accomplish one goal, you've drawn the boundaries wrong.
That sounds like it could create coordination challenges.
It can, which is why you need clear strategy and strong product leadership. Teams need to understand how their area connects to the broader product experience. But the benefits of deep focus usually outweigh the coordination costs.
You also talk about the role of senior leadership. What needs to change at the executive level?
Leaders need to stop asking, "When will it be done?" and start asking, "How will we know if it's working?" They need to create space for experimentation and accept that not every experiment will succeed.
That's a pretty fundamental shift in mindset. How do you get executives comfortable with uncertainty?
Show them the cost of being wrong. If you spend 6 months building the wrong feature, that's more expensive than running 5 small experiments and finding the right solution. Frame experimentation as risk mitigation, not wasted time.
Let's talk about measurement and metrics. You distinguish between output metrics and outcome metrics. Can you give some concrete examples?
Output metrics are things like features shipped, story points completed, or release velocity. Outcome metrics are changes in user behavior or business results, like increased customer retention, higher engagement, or revenue growth.
But don't you need some output metrics to track team productivity?
You can track them for operational purposes, but they shouldn't drive decision making. The moment you start rewarding teams for shipping more features, you're back in the build trap.
What's a good example of how outcome metrics should drive decisions?
Let's say your outcome metric is user engagement, measured by daily active users. If adding a new feature doesn't move that metric, you should question whether it's worth maintaining. Maybe you kill it and try something else.
How do you handle situations where the right outcome metrics aren't immediately obvious?
Start with leading indicators of the business outcomes you care about. If you want to increase revenue, look at user engagement, retention, or conversion rates. These usually move before revenue does, so you can course correct faster.
Now let's get practical. If someone's listening to this and recognizes their organization is in the build trap, what's the first thing they should do?
Start with your own work. Pick one feature or initiative you're working on and define success clearly. What problem are you solving? How will you know if it's working? What will you do if it doesn't work?
That sounds like something an individual product manager could do, even without organizational buy-in.
Exactly. You can't change the whole organization overnight, but you can change how you work. Start collecting evidence about whether your solutions are actually solving problems.
What should someone do if they define success clearly, but realize they can't measure it?
That's a red flag that you might not have the right problem definition. Good problems come with natural ways to measure progress. If you can't figure out how to measure it, you probably need to dig deeper into understanding the problem.
Walk me through a realistic scenario. Let's say I'm a product manager at a mid-size company, and my boss just assigned me to build a mobile app because everyone has mobile apps.
First, I try to understand the underlying goal. Why does your boss think you need a mobile app? What problem is it supposed to solve? Is it customer acquisition, engagement, convenience? Get specific about the desired outcome.
Let's say the answer is vague, something like customers expect it, or we need to be modern.
Then I do customer research. Talk to your actual customers. Do they want a mobile app? What would they use it for? What problems do they have that a mobile app might solve? Let customer evidence guide the conversation.
And if the research shows customers don't actually want or need the app?
Present that evidence to your boss along with alternative solutions to the underlying business concern. Maybe the real issue is that your website isn't mobile-friendly, or customers can't easily access support. Address the actual problem, not the assumed solution.
What if your boss insists on building the app anyway?
Then define clear success metrics up front. What does success look like? How many downloads? What usage patterns? What business impact? At least you'll have data to inform future decisions.
How long should someone expect it to take to see results from this approach?
You should see better decision-making almost immediately, within a few weeks of starting to ask better questions. Organizational change takes longer, usually 6 months to a year, to really take hold.
What are the most common mistakes people make when trying to implement this?
The biggest one is trying to change everything at once. Start small, prove the approach works, then gradually expand. People also underestimate how much customer research they need to do. You can't make good decisions without understanding your users deeply.
Any other common pitfalls?
People often define outcomes that are too broad or too far in the future. Increase customer satisfaction isn't actionable. Reduce support ticket volume by 20% in the next quarter gives you something specific to work toward.
What about when the approach doesn't seem to be working? How do you troubleshoot?
Usually it's because you're not really measuring outcomes or you're not giving experiments enough time to show results. Make sure you're tracking user behavior, not just vanity metrics like page views or downloads.
If someone could only implement one thing from your book, what should it be?
Start every project by writing down the problem you're trying to solve and how you'll know if you've solved it. Don't write a single line of code or create a single wireframe until you can clearly articulate both of those things.
Let's shift gears and talk critically about the book. What do you think it does really well?
I think it provides a clear framework for thinking about product management differently. A lot of product management advice is tactical. How to write better user stories or run better meetings. This book addresses the strategic thinking that has to come first.
Where do you think the book falls short or could be stronger?
I think I could have spent more time on the cultural and political aspects of organizational change. The frameworks are solid, but implementing them often requires navigating complex organizational dynamics that the book doesn't fully address.
How does your approach compare to other popular product management frameworks like OKRs or Jobs to be Done?
Those are complementary tools. OKRs can help you set and track outcome-based goals. Jobs to be Done helps you understand customer problems. But you need the broader organizational changes I described for those tools to be effective.
What about criticism that this approach works for tech companies but not for other industries?
I think the principles apply broadly, but the implementation has to be adapted. A manufacturing company might have longer experiment cycles than a software company, but the core idea of testing assumptions and measuring outcomes still applies.
Some people argue that too much experimentation leads to a lack of vision or direction. How do you respond to that?
That's why strategy is so important. Good experimentation isn't random. It's guided by a clear vision and strategic intent. You're not experimenting with everything. You're testing specific hypotheses about how to achieve your goals.
What would you say to someone who thinks this approach takes too long or is too risky for their competitive situation?
Building the wrong things is much riskier than taking time to build the right things. If your competition is also in the build trap, focusing on outcomes gives you a huge advantage. If they're not, you need this approach even more urgently.
Are there situations where you'd recommend against this outcome-based approach?
If you're in a pure operational role where success is clearly defined and you just need to execute efficiently, then output metrics might be more appropriate. But those situations are rarer than people think.
Let's talk about the book's impact. How has it influenced the product management field since it was published?
I've seen more organizations talking about outcomes versus outputs, which is encouraging. The concept of product operations has also gained traction, partly because people realize you need organizational support for outcome-based product management.
What changes have you seen in how companies hire and evaluate product managers?
More companies are looking for strategic thinking skills and customer research experience, not just project management capabilities. Job descriptions are starting to emphasize business outcomes and user empathy.
Has anything changed in the field that would make you approach the book differently if you were writing it today?
I'd probably spend more time on data and analytics. The tools for measuring user behavior have gotten so much better since 2018. There's less excuse now for not having good outcome metrics.
What criticism has the book received that you think is valid?
Some people point out that it's easier to implement these ideas in digital products than in physical products or regulated industries. I think that's fair. The principles are universal, but the tactics need to be adapted.
As we wrap up, what's the single most important mindset shift you want listeners to take from this conversation?
Stop measuring your success by how busy you are or how much you're shipping. Start measuring your success by whether you're solving real problems for real people. That shift in perspective changes everything.
And if someone walks away from this episode and does just one thing differently, what should it be?
Before you build anything new, write down the specific problem you're trying to solve and exactly how you'll know if you've solved it. Make those two things visible to your team and stakeholders. That one practice will transform how you work.
Melissa, thank you for taking the time to dive deep into these ideas. Escaping the Build Trap really is essential reading for anyone involved in building products.
Thanks for the thoughtful questions, Marcus. I hope this helps some teams break free from the trap and start creating real value.